Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Well, hello, Liberty Road listeners. Welcome to our Best Of series. We've pulled 5 entrepreneurial stories out of the vault to share some of our most popular episodes from women who've leaned into their curiosities and been liberated by their ventures. My hope is that each story brings you closer to considering your own possibilities. Pursuing your future doesn't end at 40. In fact, it may mark the beginning of knowing who you are, what you're capable of, and what you really want. But knowing what's next and how to get there can be a challenge, especially when old narratives play on repeat. Liberty Road is here to share stories so that you can consider your possibilities, pursue your purpose, and move into your future with intention. I'm your host, Netta Jones, and we're here to listen, learn, and liberate dreams one episode at a time. Well, hello there, Liberty listeners. Welcome to another episode of Liberty Sessions. And today we have a real treat. We've got two friends of mine, two new friends that I've had the pleasure of sharing a few gin and tonics with here in LA. And it's fun to have them in studio. Gina Pell and Amy Parker, welcome, guys.
Hey, Netta.
Oh, thanks so much, Netta. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. So I'm going to go back and forth since there's three of us on this. And I'll just ask, we'll start out with Amy. Amy, tell us a little bit about the what.
All right. Happily. Well, let's see. First, we're called the What List. We started as a newsletter, publishing a list of 5 things you need to know about. We started this about 2.5 years ago, and it's since grown into a community of like-minded women. We have a community of about 100,000 women now between ages of 30 and 60, all very perennial women. And we help each other out. We share conversations. We discover through each other. We support each other, and we're having a lot of fun. So it's just Gina and I right now, and we're happy to be here and have met you through the what.
Yes, and I have to say, it's funny that you say it's just Gina and I, because you guys are two powerhouses. And Gina, why don't you give us a little background on how the two of you met and kind of the rocket star status that you, or the rock star status rather, that you guys came from in the tech world.
You're too kind. I'll take this one, Amy. So I came from a background in pretty traditional tech. We were building really boring things called electronic performance support systems, which people don't even understand what that is now. But basically, if you think about the help system, any kind of help system that's on your computer, I used to work at a company that we used to put those on about 15 floppy disks and install them on your computer for $6 million. So too bad that business is over.
Yeah.
But so I started there, and I started as a kind of lowly traffic coordinator. And And my work there for 5 years, I worked everywhere from being a traffic coordinator, then to a producer, then to a writer. I worked for a female boss who is incredible, and she really saw the value in promoting people based on meritocracy, on what they did, not really on what their skill set was when they came into the company. And so, you know, cut to 5 years later, I started Splendora, and I started it basically from my own Rolodex. Splendora was a company that was a recommendations engine for San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York on for women on where to go, what to do. And so Amy was hired by my best friend who was working with me. And I didn't know Amy. She came in to apply for a job. Amy was amazing because we had something like the What List, which was called Friday Foreplay. And I think Amy wrote in and said, Amy pitched herself in the charming, amazing way that Amy did. And she came in, and Amy is this beautiful, you know, Amy's beautiful now, but imagine Amy at like 27 years old with long blonde hair, tight pants, coming into this office interviewing. And my best friend was interviewing her, and she came out of the meeting and she's like, oh my God, she's amazing. She wrote this whole proposal. She's totally perfect. And I said, don't hire people based on looks, which is, can you imagine how sexist that was of me?
It's good, sexist bitch, I laughed that you had to say
no,
it.
I did. No, because my girlfriend, my best friend, she loves beautiful women. She loves like beautiful people. And she gets really stars in her eyes whenever there's somebody who's charismatic and beautiful. And I'm like, we need a serious biz dev person here, not just some beautiful blonde who walks in and charms you with some thing she put together.
Some proposal.
Some marketing proposal. But you know what? Amy, my best friend, ended up getting married and having a baby and leaving the company, which was really difficult for her. She wanted to stay. But Amy ended up staying. And it was Amy that kept me in business when the whole world was falling apart. That we raised money and then the dot-com crash came and the whole internet was going out of business. And Amy said, in her North Carolina way, she's like, y'all, this is such a good idea, y'all. We should just keep going. I'm sorry, Amy. I'm sure that's a terrible.
You're getting better over the years.
But Amy kept us going with her. And Amy, I'll let you tell Netta your backstory. Well,
I came from ad sales. So I was in, you know, what was called in 97, you know, high-tech publishing. So I was working for Computer World magazine, and I had always wanted to be in the internet. And so Splendora was my big chance. And I could not fathom the idea of Splendora shutting down the doors and going out of business. And so, I had an ad sales background, and I remember thinking, well, let's see, I know how to sell ads and I know the print world. So let's make a book. And that's actually what kept us in business. We self-published self-published three books with a very skeletal team. And
what were these books about? Were they about the same thing?
It's so funny. I mean, you know, because we were luxury city guides, San Francisco, mm-hmm. Los Angeles, and New York, and so we kind of translated that to print. And so we had these beautiful books. And I remember Gina sold the first ad. She was, you can tell that, Gina, but she was at her, she was like sitting in her stylist mm-hmm. chair. And I think you pitched them right then and
well,
there,
I,
right?
My friend, Zam Joaquin, who now runs an amazing conference called Near Future, but she and I were going to shut the company down. And like any smart CEO, I went to go get my hair done because you should never underestimate the therapeutic powers of self-care.
Right.
And I'm sitting in my hairdresser's chair, and I remember Amy before I went to the hairdresser because I'm like, you guys, this isn't going to work. So we're going to have to, everybody's going out of business. Eve.com went out of business. Cosmo.com went out of business. Webvan went out of business. We're going out of business, and that's the way it is, you know, like we just have to accept it. So I was sitting in my hairdresser's chair, and he's like, hey, you guys are killing it over at Splendora, which we'll talk about this later as entrepreneurs. People have such a different opinion of us from the reality that actually exists. And so he goes, gosh, you guys are doing such a great job. Everybody's talking about you guys. What are you guys up to now? And I was mortified that I had to tell him that we were going out of business. So I said, actually, we are in the process of creating a San Francisco city guide. And he goes, oh my gosh, really? What's that going to be like? And I'm just making it up while he's doing my roots. I'm like, well, it's going to be a book with pretty pictures and it's going to feature all these amazing people in the city. And he goes, how much is it? And I go, it's $1,000 a page. He's like, girl, sign me up for four. Or, you know, he had different locations. And I came back to the office totally stunned. And I go, you guys, I think we're making a book.
I remember that day.
Netta, by the way, this is basically the same way we do business now.
Yeah, kind of.
I think if most entrepreneurs are honest, they would fess up to something very similar. Yeah. Perhaps it wasn't sitting in their hairdresser's chair, but it was at having some sort of random aha moment when things were at their lowest.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So that seems to, I mean, as I listen to the model of Splendora, it seems to, in a lot of ways, match the what list, mm-hmm. except for that the economy has totally changed. And by that, I mean the advertising economy and how people are communicating to their consumer base, their target consumer base, their existing consumer base. Is that true?
Absolutely true. I mean, I'll let you take this because yes. Amy's the business side and I'm the content side.
Okay, go, Amy. Give us your biz brains.
Yes, it is true. It's, you know, I find it so interesting that we were selling local, very local businesses for 3 years while everyone in the, you know, in the U.S. got a clue about the power of digital. And it wasn't until, I think it was 2004, Gina and I, we'd gone to New York. We were pitching a really big retail brand and we were pitching them these small little local prices. And this woman literally
Amy,
laughed
can
us
you
out
tell us
office.
Just for context what that those prices were?
So we were selling, you know, like $1,000 pages.
Okay.
I think at that point we moved up to $2,500, maybe $5,000. And we walked into this big retailer and this woman, she just laughed at us. She said, can I write you a personal check? Gina and I thought, We walked out of that office just with our heads hung low and we're like, oh man, this sucks. And it changed everything for us though, because it was a good swift kick in the ass. It's exactly what we needed at that time. The world had caught on to the power of digital at that point and advertising online, even though we'd had all of these brands for the last 3 or 4 years say, you'll never see my brand mm-hmm. online. And we're like, we're from the West Coast. Like, it's happening.
Yeah.
You know, we came back to that retailer a year later and with, I think, two or three extra zeros on there, and we were off to the races. It changed our business. We were working with national brands, we built a really amazing business from that point forward through sponsorship. Funny enough, I mean, fast forward 10 plus years later, things have changed drastically. And, you know, Gina and I started the what 2.5 years ago with the idea that we could go back out and kind of connect with all of our brands and our clients from Splendora days. And it would be no problem to just turn those relationships back on. But what we found is, number one, the landscape in general had changed. It's a very influencer focused landscape. About followers, less about relationships. And two, that they were very focused on, I mean, we heard this verbatim, well, if you're not targeting millennials specifically, we're not interested.
Right.
And so it's been a learning for us, a learning process over the last couple of years to evolve our business and figure out how to build relationships with brands that we want to bring them into our world and into the conversations that we're having with our community, rather than just selling them impressions and selling them banners, which was very much the case for the early 2000s. And so it's different. I personally think it to be a much more authentic way to work with brands right now. And so we're having fun discovering, you know, what that looks like and how we bring them into our world.
And yet it required us to go through that season 10 years ago to get to this, right?
I mean, absolutely,
in order to get to this sort of authentic place with brands and consumers requiring this sort of transparency, we had to go through that.
Yes.
Gina, I want to direct this next question at you. As Amy talked about you know, you guys pursuing these brands and brands talking about, hey, look, if you're not pursuing millennials, if you're not reaching millennials, you know, we're not interested. So I know you had become in the midst of this prior to this, maybe, you know, some years back, I'm not sure. You had become fascinated by, intrigued by, and sort of annoyed with this concept that there is a demographic that perhaps is being ignored. And some of this is me projecting. So you can own what's yours and the leftovers are mine. But what did you do to retell that story or create a different paradigm for both us within, well, you coined this phrase perennial. Why did you do that? What was the intention behind that? And tell us a little bit more about it.
So perennials, it was an article that I wrote back in 2016. That was a year after Amy and I started the What List. And I was basically putting a name to something that Amy and I had been feeling for a long time. And the reason why we started the What was in direct response to the fact that after we sold Splendora, after Daily Candy was sold, and Daily Candy was started by Danny Levy, who had become a really great friend. I love Danny. You know, and Danny and I, when we were all doing this together, we were always talking about, you know, Daily Candy started by selling $250 mentions in their newsletter and $500 mentions. And then, you know, we scaled to reflect the sign of the times and the fact that we were gaining power as digital media companies. But, you know, after Daily Candy sold and after Splendora sold, Amy and I were sitting around. Amy was working somewhere else. I was doing my thing. We had two companies under our belts and we were longing to work together again. And we started throwing around ideas. And one idea that we kept coming back to time and time again was there's no content that really appeals to us as consumers, women. Forget about age. I hate that thing, like women of a certain age. It sounds like a disease, right? So yeah. It's just that, I mean, even though, yeah, of course, we all age, but I feel that it's our spirit, how Amy and I connected. We've been partners in three different companies over the last 18 years. It's not because of our ages. I mean, I hate this too, Amy. I'm 6 years older than Amy. Amy's birthday's next week. And my daughter's like, is Amy going to be your age?
I think of us as the same age, always.
I think of myself as younger.
Damn you.
Amy's the grown up in our relationship.
But that's, I mean, you're speaking exactly to what Gina's talking about, which is kind of the spirit.
Yes.
That it's kind just, of what we bring to the table.
Exactly.
And the thoughts that we share or have in common.
Right. And so, you know, this is a very long-winded way of answering your question, Netta, about perennials. But, you know, it started actually with Amy and I creating content for perennials before I even put a name to it. And then after creating this content and we noticed that we had this following of women, some women as young as 18 years old or 19 years old, some women as old as 89 years old reading it. And I started thinking to myself when we went out there to go make money off of the brand, why are people so focused on millennials when the biggest technology companies in the world, the most successful companies in the world, are focused on what you do and your interests? So if you look at Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, they're not targeting you based on your birth year. So I wrote this article. It went crazy viral. CNN covered it. MSNBC covered it. It was translated into 9 different languages. My favorite is Norwegian. It's in Aftenposten in the equivalent of the Norwegian New York Times Sunday magazine. I have it in print. It's so impressive to see like Gina Pell and then a lot of Norwegian following that. It's seriously one of my proudest moments.
Please tell me it's framed somewhere.
You know, I kind of like pull it out when people come over. I'm like, oh, did you see this?
No, it needs a frame.
Oh, yeah.
It deserves a frame.
Right.
Amy, get it framed.
Right. But you know, with the
done,
I think with perennials, the reason why it's, I think the reason why it's resonating, it's really struck a chord, especially with people over 40, which is great, but I really want to drive home the fact that perennials isn't just about relevancy after 40, but it's about a mindset that I'm sure, Netta, you've had, that I know Amy has had, that I've had since I was a child, where I don't see limitations based on my age. I look at the world through a lens of curiosity, through possibility, right? And I don't think like when I was 19 or 18 or 17 or 32, I wasn't thinking, well, I'm too old for this now. I'm too young for this now, right? Look at Emma Gonzalez.
But you weren't thinking that way, but doesn't it shock you how many people do? That's when I feel like an outlier.
Yeah.
When I'm amongst my friends who are like, well, you know, I mean, I got about 10 more years. And then I'm like, 10 more years of what?
Right.
Why are you even talking like that?
Well, you know.
Not because it's scary, but because it hadn't occurred to me that there was an end date, that there was some sort of expiration date on my career or my possibilities or what I was capable of doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it.
Well, I'll tell you, it's built into our system, right? So, I mean, the fact that that retirement age was set at 65, it makes total sense that by the time we're 40, we go, oh man, I only have 25 years left and I might as well just keep going on what I'm doing right now, because to learn a brand new thing would be crazy for me to start from the beginning. And so we come from a society that doesn't value, that values, it's not even youth, okay? Because society doesn't value people under 30 usually, or people under 25, right? Society just values that golden age between when you're really killing it, supposedly, right? Between like 32 and 40-ish, right?
Yeah, God forbid you didn't kill it in that season. Right. You're kind of washed up.
Right?
But, you know, I completely understand why people think of themselves that way. I have close friends and a lot of my family members who make those statements all the time. Like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I can't dance anymore on a Wednesday night or wear a mini skirt. I understand why it exists, but when I wrote this article, I really thought that this was just another Gina rant that I was going to write and I was going to disappear into the internet, like a lot of my stuff has, or I should say some of my stuff. But I think that, you know, the reason why I keep going with it, and I've been asked to write a book and I absolutely did not want to, but I'm working on a book right now. And the reason why I'm working on it is because every time I speak about it, and I've been speaking about it in places as varied as a beauty conference to UC Berkeley, my alma mater, to women's conferences. I speak about it because every time I talk about it, I think I awaken some people in the crowd who go, oh my gosh, you're totally right. Life is not over yet, or life, I don't have to wait for life to begin. And I've been surprised that people in their late 20s have come up to me and said how much it's changed, how just calling themselves a perennial has changed how they're viewed in the workplace, because they can be a perennial and their 60-year-old boss can be a perennial, and that it's a unifying concept and not a divisive generation, and that they absolutely have. I mean, yeah, of course there are some things, stereotypical things that we can relate to with any group we belong to, right? So it's like, I don't know about you, Netta, but it's like, I'm from the 80s. 80s and 90s, maybe Amy's from like the 90s. And, you know, it's like, there's some things we can relate to, but the fact that that's not going to define us. And we are people of the moment and people of the future. And the fact is that people are going to live a lot longer, and we're going to have to pivot so much more in the future that I don't care what age you are right now. You're going to have to learn to pivot, grow, regrow, be fallow. And that is what perenniality is all about. And that's why I continue to talk about it.
I love it. And it's actually the way we met. I read an article. You were in the article. It was from a newspaper in London.
Oh my gosh.
I thought you were English. And lo and behold, I don't know, 3-4 weeks later, I'm at a parent party for my fourth grade son. And a friend of mine says, there is a woman that I really want you to meet. She's a dear friend of mine from San Francisco. And it was you. It was you, Gina. I was like, are you kidding me? I know all about this woman. I've read that article. And then, you know, then the gin and tonics.
Yeah.
And here we are. So I get the awakening. Mm-hmm. I get what that means. And it's for me, it has so much to do with liberty. And if you were articulating something that I hadn't been able to, in a fluid way, I think you hit the nail on the head in saying this is both inclusive and
self-selective, I think.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You choose.
Yeah.
You
and,
choose.
And I think it just, I could use the word perennial. It wouldn't you know, cause some inquiry, which I liked from people. I mean, it would make them, it would beg for that sort of curiosity. And then we could unpack and unfold what it means to continue to be curious, to continue to wonder what could be. And I think that's just at the heart of what we're doing here. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate how it's really informed the what. It's, I mean, the fact that you have this audience that's grown to this 100,000 size in such a short amount of time is sort of remarkable, because it's a noisy place out there, that digital world. Mm-hmm. And so you guys have definitely hit something. You've struck a chord. You've hit a nerve. And I think it's a meaningful one. And having been on your Facebook groups, participated in them, it's obvious that people feel safe and are willing to be vulnerable in that space. Mm-hmm. How have you guys, how do you think you created that space? Like, what was it about the, so you're experts and you're telling people here's some cool things to do and see and read and whatever, but that doesn't necessarily translate into creating a safe place for that community online. How do you think you did that? How did you marry those two?
It's funny. I mean, Gina and I were just chatting about this before we hopped on. It's, you know, we're 2.5 years into our business, and it's really, I mean, we launched our group a year ago, almost to the day. And, you know, we launched this because we were in a really tough place in terms of, you know, we'd had our business for 18 months. When Gina and I started the What, we made a really conscious effort and a commitment to each other to not focus on revenue, to just focus on content and our readers. And we held true to that. We held each other accountable for that. And it was great, because that's what allowed us to really grow such a strong reader base and to grow that trust. But fast forward 18 months, it is, you know, we are in a place where everyone thinks like, oh, y'all are killing it. And, you know, the what's doing this and the what's doing that. And all we're thinking is, gosh, so, and people were thinking, so we had some people say, well, is it a hobby or what are you doing with this? Yeah. Like, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And we're trying to turn this into something. And because everything that we've done and the What List started, you know, it's kind of through the lens of our friendship. We thought, okay, so what's next? What's next for us? And how do we translate this into something that is a business, that we are having fun with, and that's still delivering on kind of what we set out to do. And so, you know, connecting, inspiring, engaging, empowering women. And we sat down, and I kid you not, I mean, we sat down one day, and we were at a winery, and we were sipping on some wine and going through ideas on, okay, so how do we jumpstart this? Not just for our audience, but for ourselves. And we sat there and we said, why are we doing this? What are we doing here? And Gina, I think that's when you just read that book, the five whys, right? And so Gina said, okay, I've got an exercise for us. So it's the why. So we're going to ask each other questions, and we're going to drill down until we understand really why we're doing this. And so we went through this exercise of, why do we love this? Why are we doing this? Are we delivering on connecting, engaging, empowering, inspiring? And at that point in time, we only had our newsletter. We'd done a handful of events, and as we're going through, are we connecting? Okay. Yes, I guess we're connecting with our readers a little. Are we engaging? Not really. Are we inspiring? Maybe. And we realized that we've got this great newsletter, but it's still just an outgoing message. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really close the circle or close the loop for us in terms of building those relationships that we love with our readers, with our community. And so I had lunch with a friend a few weeks prior, and she said, you know, y'all still have this Facebook group, right? And I said, yeah, you know, we do. We've got 100 members or so. She said, wow, you know, you should look at that. And Gina and I talked about it that day. And we sat there and we said, let's post something to this group. We've got 100 members. Let's post something. And the question was, aside from sex, how do you find pleasure in life? And so we responded, and then Gina and I parted ways, not really having come to a conclusion on what we were going to do to really jumpstart our business. And we got home and we realized that we had all these comments and all these likes on Facebook in our group. And we thought, wow, we're kind of on to
something. And women inviting their friends. And, remember we had, yeah.
Women inviting
like 110
friends.
Friend yes, requests to our Facebook group. And we thought, oh my gosh, the light bulb went off. We never asked
and
them.
Never. Yeah, exactly.
We've
been putting it out there, but we'd never asked them. We were never in conversation with them.
Let me ask you, there's two things that brings up for me. So our listeners are very likely to be saying, this is fantastic, but the platform I want to launch or grow needs to make money. These two weren't focused on money. Can you tell us why that wasn't a focus, or was it just eventually we will, but just not now? We're giving ourselves a couple years to to focus on on really building out the content.
Like Amy said in the very beginning, what we didn't do right in our first business, which was we raised money and we were expected to become this big business and scale. So that's where our focus was on the business and making money. What we did the second time, which is I think what we did right, is especially if you're in media, your product is. You have to think about what is your product. So what for us, it's media. It's the content that we create. For anybody who is going into business, you have a product that you are trying to promote and sell. And so in terms of creating community, we could not even think about how to monetize it to begin with. Because, I mean, it's one thing, like if you're selling widgets, you have to figure out how you're going to sell them and what your distribution method is. But when you have something as complicated as a newsletter or media, you're trying to grow some following and you want to monetize that, there's no possible way. Believe me, we've done this for 20 years. This is our year 20 it's not. I exaggerate. This is year 18.
18. Close enough.
That you have to come up with the right product first. And to simply think about selling is, or how to make money off of it, is the wrong focus. So Amy and I figured that the right focus was how to create something meaningful, deep, addictive, something that people would turn to time and time again. And so going back to our reason for being, creating this engaging, empowering content for perennials, what was behind that, at the very heart of that, was our friendship. And so we did a lot of exercises to figure out what is this our brand soul. And our brand soul, from the beginning, even in our Splendora days, it was all about friendship, female friendships, our own friendship, and everything that came out of that became the business, which is easy and fun and great, but also very difficult. So going back to creating this community, and Ned, I think your question was, if you're focused on how to make this into a business, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. At least it was for us. Because when you look at how can I make money off of that, out of it, it moves your content. See, I'm not even saying brand, because brand is one thing and the stuff that creates the brand is another thing, right? It moves everything into maybe a bad way, right? So if you're creating,
it's motivated by something different.
So let's just look at community. If your focus is like, how can I create community and a bunch of women to follow what I do? Okay, well, I need to make money off of them. So maybe I'm going to hook up with some retail brands, bring them to the retail brand space, take 20% of all sales. You know, that, okay, well, that works too, because Amy and I did that too. We did that in the beginning, and we'd bring a bunch of women who wanted to connect with each other and be friends, and we'd bring them to a retailer space. And within a few hours, we would sell something like crazy, like $18,000 worth of merchandise, right? Well, that's not scalable, because women will come together just to see each other. But when you keep coming together to buy things, it kind of starts feeling bad. Yeah. And we started realizing women just wanted to be together, period. You know, like if there's other things around it, because they realize that we have to make money out of it too, they're going to tolerate it for us. but women just want to be together. And so to figure out how to bring women together so they can be together and what are some of the things they want to do together, not around some kind of business goal of yours. And that's, you know, that's what we did. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, I think we talk about this a lot, but one thing I did as a content chief that I've been my whole life, you know, just like a chief editor trying to think about what people will like and pushing it out there. This one-way street that we were talking about, this outgoing message. What's changed now is that we're listening. We're listening now. And I think the fact that we listened and we're paying attention rather than just continuing to push out our own bullshit. I'm sorry. Am I allowed to swear?
You are. We encourage it here at Liberty.
Okay, good.
But you know,
whatever makes you feel like you.
Thank you.
We encourage.
I think I need it sometimes. You know, I there was a quote in a newsletter a couple of weeks ago. I think that we quoted Elizabeth Gilbert. I just love. I love that quote. I'm going to mess it up, but I don't know it verbatim. Yeah. But she said something like, "Part of there's been no successful evolution or something without." Letting go of your own bullshit or something about just like when you get tired of your own bullshit, I think is when you can really start to grow. And I think as entrepreneurs, first time, second time, third time, we always have this message that this Kool-Aid that we're drinking that we're just, oh my gosh, you know what? What I'm doing is I'm creating the sustainable, whatever, amazing, new fangled revolutionary thing. And you just get so caught up in your own message that you're not thinking, how is this being received? What do these people want?
Yeah.
Once I've created this thing, now what are they telling me that they want more? And we learned, Amy and I learned the most from critical feedback, negative feedback, aggressive feedback, frankly.
Yeah.
One woman once told us that we beat all over her life.
You can't have 100,000 people talking to you and not have aggressive feedback. Yeah. It's a numbers game. I want to say, because I think there are people listening who you guys are offering a lot of wisdom around the media space, the content space, and there are still lots of voices who are trying to figure out how to make money on that. Mm-hmm. And we know what's happening in print, and we know, you know, there's been this quarterly revolution, and hopefully some of those will be able to sustain themselves, but who really knows? It's so expensive. We know that advertisers are looking elsewhere because they're creating their own media. They're creating their own platforms.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the takeaway from listening to the two of you is if this is a space that you want to get into, pay attention to who you want to serve and come at it from that first and worry about the monetization later, because it's such a sensitive, that's not the word. It's a fragile, business framework. You've got to build the foundation with people, perhaps, and not just with content, pictures, words, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. It starts with people. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me, my son, and I think always bringing it back to like its purest form. And I share this because my son, a couple months ago, he was telling some women what the what was. They asked him, and I was like, I was so excited for him to share this. I was like, I cannot wait to hear this. He's 7 years old. And he said, well, the what helps women be friends, get together and share stories.
Wow.
Oh. And I heard that and I was like, wow, that is what we do in the purest sense.
Yeah.
And if a 7-year-old little boy can get that, then we're on to something.
Yeah.
And we've done a really good job at holding each other accountable to just like bring in it.
Yeah.
You know, like this is what we do. And so if he can get it, then I think about that a lot, because when I'm in our community, and that's, you know, it's our reader community that really helps keep us going in tough times, that I look to what we have built and I see the response and I see the conversations and I see the support and the wisdom. And I think, okay, if my 7-year-old son can explain it like that, and these women are experiencing it on a day-to-day with each other, then we're on to something. And if you stay true to that, then you can, I think you can build anything and you can tackle anything.
Well, you just, you named a very magical intersection when what you say you do is what your consumer base experiences. Yep. And that's often not the case, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So you guys talked about a difficult time. You're at a winery, you're asking your whys, you respond with, let's throw out this Facebook question. Was there a time other than that in this particular venture with the what that you guys wanted to just throw in the towel and what kept you going?
I mean,
many times.
Right. Every hour. I think it's just, you know what? It's built into the entrepreneurial process that you feel it throwing in the towel all the time. If I didn't have Amy, I probably would have thrown in the towel a long time ago. But going back to the business question that you answered, the tactical question of how do you monetize content? Because I know you have a lot of readers who are content producers, and it is really, really hard to figure this out when you're on your own. There used to be all of these places online where you can go and register your URL or do whatever it is and get your micro commerce, whatever. The way as a new, I'm going to call it, let's just coin a term right now, like the new content creators now. And by new content creators, mm-hmm. I mean like creating content in the Arctic freeze of brands not wanting to spend money on you. Amy, this is for Amy and I, this totally. Is like par for the course. We already went through this when the whole internet failed back in 2001.
2008.
Yeah, it's a cycle.
Pick a year, any year.
But I mean, it's going to happen again. I mean,
it is happening. Yeah. It is happening in the influencer arena where fewer are getting the support, the financial support, and the micro influencer is like, never mind. Why even bother?
Right. But, there's nothing. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I was talking to a girlfriend of mine, and she started a small makeup brand that is now a massive makeup brand, and she's such a tough. She is the toughest entrepreneur she wasn't in the makeup business. She just bought a book on Amazon, got a blender, and now she's like one of the biggest makeup brands out there right now. She goes, I was just whining to her over lunch and bitching like, oh my God, my business is so hard. It's just not the same. I just can't make the money I used to hit send and collect $58,000 and now people are bitching about $2,000, you know? And she goes, stop whining and just know that.
Suck it up.
She did. She actually did.
She totally did.
And I love her for that. She goes, she's like, listen, first of all, stop whining because everything you're telling me is bullshit. And I go, what? It's not bullshit. The whole climate, the whole media climate has changed. She's like, so what? She's like, when I went to go launch my makeup brand back in 1999, everything had changed. And I was like this weeny, teeny, tiny lip gloss company. And there are a million huge brands out there. And I found my way, and then Sephora dumped us, and I found my way, and I continue to find my way. You just have to find your way. And I'm like, what a bitch, you know? But she was,
yeah.
I was really just jealous because she really did find her way, and she's tough, and she's resilient, and she doesn't take no for an answer. And she's like, listen, when things are down, when the industry is changing, that's when all the opportunity arises, right?
That's right.
It's like.
Amen. I absolutely believe
it's like
that.
When the nuclear wars come, like all of the cockroaches will be scuttling out of their hiding places, right? And she's like, you just have to, okay, so you're telling me that all the media companies are spending money on all these the huge brands and you're too small to compete? So start going, talking to those brands, like, you know, figure out your way, figure out what's going to, like, make a city guide, make this, like, start thinking about new things you can create, right? And so to be very specific about how Amy and I do it is you actually, as a content creator, you can't just sit back on your ass and like think like maybe someone's going to come to me and maybe I could just apply for this affiliate program online. Okay. Yeah. You can, if you want to make $20 a month or whatever, you know,
a year.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, sadly. But the way that you have to do it, which is the way you always have to do it, is Amy and I call it hand-to-hand combat. You got to call up the brands that you think that you can move the needle on, no matter how big or small, how small your audience is, right? So let's say you have like 500 women on your email list, or like 100 women, moms at your school, or whoever the people are. Then you figure out, well, who would want to know about these women? Who would want to know about my audience? And then you call those people up and you say, I have 100 people. I'm going to bring them to your company. Figure it out. Like, make it up. See what they want.
Yep. Make it up as you go.
They'll tell you what they need. They'll go, oh, interesting. So you have 100 women who are affluent or whatever they are. They could be, they're all school teachers and they want to, whomever you're trying to aggregate as a content creator, you must have some sort of overlap in your community where they're a certain kind, they're a like-minded kind of person, right? And somebody wants to get in front of that person. So figure out who those people are and then go talk to them. Say, I have these people, you know, why don't we do something together? Yeah. Whether it's
so on the heels of your friend, who gave you the advice.
She's really my very beloved
friend. For us because she's giving all of us that opportunity to think outside of the box and also to not be lazy and say, I got into content because there were these models that were in place that I could hit click and I would be a part of that community, whether it's affiliate or otherwise. That's what's changed. The need for people to still have content, the need for people to still aggregate
content is a
like-minded group is still very important.
There will never be anything more important than content, I believe. Like, just think about how our world is driven by content, whether it's real news or fake news or advertising messages or inspirational moving things that can change lives, right? It's all about content and it's all about your point of view. And I think that
But you can never be lazy about it, ever.
Well, we can't. It's just about what I talk about when I talk about perenniality. You can't blame these cohorts that are outside of yourself. You can't blame industries. You can't blame your age group. You can't blame, like you can. And then you can just sit there and just be a victim of like, well, now I'm over 40 now, or well, I'm a woman now and I don't have any opportunity. Or well, I mean, nothing ever gets accomplished by saying, you know, by saying like, the industry sucks and so therefore I can't do what I want to do. No, we can do, I mean, you know this, everybody who's listening, I'm sure, to Liberty, and I love the name Liberty, it's about freedom, right? We can do seriously whatever the fuck we want to do. It's just going to take really, really hard work, headaches. You're going to have to meditate. You're going to have to like be in denial. You're going to have some fun with some friends to take your mind off of it. But we can do
get your hair done.
No, we can do anything we want to do. It's just like, are you into it for the hard work? And Amy and I don't focus on the hard work. We focus more on the fun.
I love it. And it's obvious. It's obvious in your relationship. It's obvious in the women that you've been able to pull into your community that they see and understand and feel a part of what you guys have created, and it is the success of the what. So what does it mean for each of you to be liberated, Gina?
I mean, for me, liberation is, I can't really feel totally free. It's kind of like what's written on the Statue of Liberty by the poet Emma Lazarus. I can't really feel totally free unless everybody else is free.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
That's beautiful. Amy, mm-hmm. how about you?
Gosh, I can't really, I would have to agree with that. I think for me, liberation is this, being in conversation with amazing people about the things that are important to us and being honest about it and sharing our wisdom and gaining so much from others if we're willing to listen. To me, that's the most liberating thing.
Mm. Well, you guys have liberated us, and what you're doing at The What is doing just that, liberating other women, again, creating space to be vulnerable, to be connected, to be honest, to be excited, to see a future that perhaps they couldn't see without a community cheering them on. So thank you guys for the work that you're doing and putting out into the world. We can't wait to share this with our listeners.
Thank you, Netta.
Absolutely.
You're doing the same. Big fans.
No, thanks. Thanks so much.
Liberty Road is broadcast on all platforms: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and more. If you like what you've heard, please follow, rate, and review Liberty Road on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps us to know if these episodes are inspiring and equipping your ventures. Liberty Road is produced by Netta Jones and Elizabeth Joy Windham, and music by Jordan Flower.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.